Welcome back. It's Andy Parks, Fred Grandy, live from the Washington Times on 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT, and RLTV.
Right.
On your cable system.
That's right. Broadcasting live.
Yeah.
First time ever.
First time ever on television.
This is a radio show on TV. We want to emphasize that at the outset.
Oh, well, thank you, Fred.
Well,
that's very nice.
Because a lot of people think it's a TV show. It's not a TV show. It's a radio show on TV.
Okay. Now that you've said that, let's bring on another important part of the puzzle, and that would be Dr. Milton Wolf, Washington Times columnist, board-certified radiologist, and the cousin of Barack Hussein Obama. Hello, doctor.
Dr. Wolf.
Greetings from the wolf in wolf's clothing. How are you guys?
We're doing just fine. I saw your piece in today's Washington Times. GOP should fear voters, not the fiscal cliff. Now, Fred and I have spent the last, 20 minutes or more talking about the fiscal cliff and, you know, some of the pieces of the puzzle. But you bring up something very interesting. The voter is more important than going off the fiscal cliff because the GOP could really get slammed by the voter, let's say, in 2 years from now.
We're going to have to be the steel in their spine, those House Republicans. You know, this really is a trap that Barack Obama has sprung for them, and it's very similar to the trap that Democrats gave to George H.W. Bush in 1990, convince him to go along with a tax increase in order to get supposed spending cuts that we all know will never happen, just so he sends them back to their voters, back to us, having broken the pledge to never raise taxes again. And if we really thought that spending cuts would occur, well, maybe we could understand. But we know they have no intention of cutting spending. In fact, Barack Obama is now proposing increasing spending by $255 billion.
But you know, Dr. Wolf, you start your piece by saying, how many times does Lucy have to pull away the football before Charlie Brown finally wakes up and starts playing the game? Look, George H.W. Bush was not the first Charlie Brown. Ronald Reagan signed that same deal with some of his early budget things. It wasn't until he got to the Tax Reform Act of 1986 that he said, enough, guys, I know how to play this game now. But what I don't quite understand is why we never seem to learn these lessons. It's like, you know, history obviously, we're doomed to repeat it.
Absolutely. And the reality is, no matter what happens, whether we choose to go over that fiscal cliff, whether we give Barack Obama all the spending and tax increases he wants, we could roll over and do whatever he wants. They will blame Republicans no matter what. We've got to set that in our minds. We have to know that's going to happen, and we have to be to brace for it. Now, you know what the battle that I would rather fight? I would rather fight the Democrats on what they've been saying for the last decade. For the last decade, they have told us that the Bush tax cuts are, A, only for the rich, and, B, they are the root of all evil. They blame those tax cuts for our bad economy, for the housing bubble, for the financial crisis, for our recession, for unemployment. Then fine. If these are pure evil, like they've said they are, let's take them away and let's see what happens. They'll have some explaining to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's an interesting point because that presumes that we all go over the cliff. Everybody's taxes go up. We all live with sequestration. But we were talking about this before you joined us. And my guess is the American public has been so insulated by the kind of phony political rhetoric we get from both parties, whether they're talking about investment or budgeting, until they actually see what happens when you hit the ground, they're not going to get the message because their members of Congress are usually in place to protect them from hard decisions. So they're essentially trying to save us from ourselves.
Indeed, you're right. And these one of the very important things I think about if we're going to raise taxes on everyone. You know, the Democrats love to say everyone should pay their fair share.
Yeah.
Well, right now the top 10% of income earners pay around 80% of the federal income taxes and pay around 70% of the total federal taxes. Now, they earn about 50% of the income. They're already paying their fair share. Democrats would have you believe it needs to be more. What would be fair at that point? 80, 90, all of it, 100%?
Yeah.
They're paying their fair share, but the Democrats have a long game here. They want to force the tax burden on fewer and fewer citizens because they know that if somebody is a beneficiary of government largesse, and this could be a person who decides to sit on the government dole on their sofa and collect food stamps and a welfare check, or this could be somebody who does go out and earn a living and gets a paycheck, but still is a beneficiary of big government, and now they're no longer a taxpayer.
Yeah.
Once you disassociate them from the price that they have to pay for government, then what's to keep them from spending more and more? And Democrats, economists would call that a disaster. Democrats would call that a voting base.
Yeah, let me ask you about this whole fair share thing. I, for one, am so sick and tired of hearing that, and that's all we heard leading up to the election. You know, Americans have to do their fair share. You ever notice, though, they never really tell you what the fair share is? And it doesn't matter whether you're a middle-income earner or you're a high-income earner. They never actually give you a number. I think most Americans would like to know that if you fall into this bracket, this is your fair share. Why don't they do that, Fred? Well, why don't they do that, Dr.
Because
Wolf?
Class warfare is essentially based on one simple concept. If you've got more than me, that's not fair. Am I right about that, Milton? I mean, does that pretty much describe it?
The reason they don't do it is because it works.
Yeah, okay. Now let me ask you something about the scuttlebutt that's happening in this town. As you know, John Boehner put revenues on the table, was rebuffed by the White House, but is now getting a lot of heat from his right by saying, why did you do that in the first place? You're not speaking for me. And as a matter of fact, a member of your own Kansas delegation, Tim Hulskamp, who we talked to yesterday, was kicked off his committees for being a little bit too loud in his... A little too conservative in his protest of the speaker. Could you conceive of perhaps the Republicans rising up and having a kind of internal, fractious, almost civil war? Well, you know what that would relate to? Hmm. Perhaps trying to run against John Boehner when he stands for re-election Congress first sits. Do you think that could happen?
I think it's beginning to happen right now.
Yeah,
and I'll up the ante right now. You know what I would do if I was the House Republicans? There's no rule, of course, in the House that says the Speaker of the House must actually be a representative or a member
right.
of the House.
Right.
Wouldn't it be amazing to have the House Republicans elect Sarah Palin as their speaker? Let her go after Barack Obama for a while.
That'd be very funny.
The only problem with that...
Rush Limbaugh!
but having said that, we have to be mindful. You know, this is a finite number of people. You got 435 votes in this particular plebiscite. And if you divide the Republican vote, you could conceivably elect Nancy Pelosi the Speaker of the
House. That's true.
And so we have to be careful what we wish for.
This is true. I'll tell you what I would recommend. I like Glenn Reynolds' idea of Instapundit.com, and he says, you know what, let's put forward some plans like pass the Simpson-Bowles Act. Let's pass some laws that make the Hollywood fat cats pay their fair share, if that's what Democrats are all about. Let's close the Washington revolving door where people step out of a government job and into a cozy private sector job and earn several times what they were earning. Let's put those laws forward. Let's pass that in the House, and let's force the Democrats in the Senate to kill it. Let's force President Obama to veto it, because we know he will.
Could I add baseline budgeting to that wish list, Dr. Wolf?
Absolutely.
All right.
And make them kill it. Put them on record for killing these common sense ideas, and then let's walk away from this phony fiscal cliff debate, and then let's put the blame squarely where it belongs on the Democrats, who have wanted to get rid of the Bush tax cuts for a decade.
All right. Very good. Always great to talk to you, Dr. Wolf. Please come back. Join us again.
There's too much common sense for one program.
Yeah. One other thing. Before I let you run today, Barack Obama, your cousin, has announced that he's taking a 20-day vacation to Hawaii. I'm assuming you got the invite?
Strangely, once again, I did not. But I do have to say one thing he said today at the Business Roundtable. He said he wants to stabilize the deficit. Now, give that a little thought. A $1 trillion deficit no president has ever run up. He's hit it for 4 years, and he wants to stabilize us at $1 trillion deficit.
That wacky cousin of yours.
He's speaking code again. I just can't. I don't know what that one means.
See you later. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Dr. Milton Wolf, Washington Times columnist and the cousin of Barack Obama. 334, 730 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. It's Andy Parks and Fred Grandy live from the Washington Times.